person that actually in the process. I just want to ensure that we lay down and ground rules. We are going to make an introduction. And after that introduction, guests are going to introduce themselves. I'm of the understanding that guests are aware that they are not here to interface or to participate. It is only honorable members and whoever is going to present, in this case it is the department. Phones are to be off. Yeah, I think it's important that we will also want to know who are people that have come to join us. We don't have a problem with you joining us, but because we know that the committees are open to public, except in exceptional situations and circumstances. So in welcoming you, I will introduce myself. I'm Linda Lovey, I'm the chair of the Fellow Committee on Health. And then I will request honorable members on my right to do that. And after that, it will be the department. And after the department, it will be the people that have come to join us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Ke nga ka maisela ke leloko la komiti. Thank you.
Okay, ang bong kinslalo ng kisyo nga masarel sa bong lung lalil komiti sa dembi.
Dumelang ba ka ito? Inay dumelang wa ka masala ke leloko la komiti ya mafia.
Siyabonga ngikwenye isihlalo sabonani igama lami nonhlanhlanga uvindaba oyilunga lale komiti. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Hanif Farman. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. Ngingulungiswa Chen. Ngilunga komiti.
Mora for Satar leder van de committee. Goedemorgen allemaal, mijn naam is Samatia.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Maribona Cesar Masgupo. I'm here with the team. I'm also interested in the
morning, again, honorable members. I'm Ben Pele from the National Department.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Rufona Koshi from the Department.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. I'm Fred Mukwa from the Ministry of Health.
Morning, everybody. My name is Kaka Kapam, Minister of Health.
On the extreme left is Ms. Mbali, Makubali, the committee assistant. On my far right is Moses, who is supposed to be the research team. Next to him is the girl with our researcher. It's Ms. Lewis, who is the legal assistant of the committee. And we have got our current advisor. Ms. Romani, who had treatment, she is sick, she lost her father, and our saying to her, trying to, that she must know that the things that happened, I said to her, welcome to the world of fatherless. Mm-hmm. So some of us are fatherless and motherless, but with the understanding that losing a parent is quite a huge challenge. Okay, we will We will then request our guests to introduce themselves.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nasir Umar. I'm a visitor. I represent Dr. Mayal Products.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Harun Umar. I'm from the same company, Dr. Mayal.
Sabarani.
Guten Tag.
Bonjour.
Comment ça? Ni hao. My name is Len Yikin, and I'm a citizen that attends the committee as often as I can.
Hi, my name is
Susan.
I'm a researcher for the
Dead.
Sorry, I didn't pick up your name. Good morning, everybody. My name is Tamar Khan. I'm a journalist with Business Day and the Financial Mail.
Good morning. My name is Darren Dona. I'm here from the Saddam Research Center.
Good morning, my name is Tom Hanji, I'm a PMG Monitor. Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Laura Madanson, Regulatory Manager for the Tobacco.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ashley Smardo from Ethical Political Consulting.
Thank you very much, members and our guests. We've got two apologies. One is a thing of apology. Mr. Kepos, who has been in an operation, so on to join us when you come back. Honorable James is a candidate. He's been in the capacity of the having said that, members will be aware that we are from public hearings, and in those public hearings, part of the people that were part of them were the department because they are to be joined. And after that process, the department is then to come back to the community and take us through on the issue. An approach that we are then going to take for today's committee. The department is going to take us through on areas where they are in agreement with the people that have been in the service. And then we must use them in the act, whatever. And then that will be for today. We are going to come back again next week for another phase of being used by the department. The reason is that we don't want to do everything at the same time today. We want to give a stage so that all of us who are able to really understand, all of us who are able to be taken, we are taken through and understand, so that when we then deliberate, we deliberate being more clearer and understanding of what it is that is going on. So I just thought that it's important for members to understand that is the approach that is then going to we are then going to take. Having said that, we will then hand over to you, Madam Gigi, to take up who is going to be the presentation. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. We have prepared a document that has been distributed. Dr. Anbantili will take the committee through the comments that were presented by different stakeholders that we are in agreement with. We prepared our response in the following manner. We referred specifically to the text in the bill, in the amendment bill, and what the proposed amendment is by the presenters, and we said why we agreed. So in the last column, we said the rationale for agreeing with those things. Thank you very much. So over to you.
Thank you, Jane, honorable members. So we've summarized the comments as they are in the bill, so that rather than repeating the comments from each stakeholder, we'll summarize them as to essentially what they were suggesting and whether we agree or disagree with them. So starting with the first comment, it related to the issue of in section one of the definition. And in section one in the definition of advertisement, the definition read, an advertisement in relation to any medicine, scheduled substance, medical device, or IVD means any written pictorial, visual, or other descriptive matter or verbal statement or reference. And then under A, it has appearing in any newspaper, magazine, pamphlet, other publication. So the proposal was that in addition to publication, we made plural publication, and in addition, the proposal of all electronic media. And I think given the age that we're in, we see the rationale behind including electronic media, because this is an act going forward, and one can never predict the innovative advertising that may arise, and one would need to regulate all of that. So we would accept that publications or electronic media is a reasonable proposal. Moving then to the second one, which is the proposed medical devices change. Under the definition of medical devices, which is section one, medical device means any instrument, apparatus, implement, machine, appliance, implant. And then there was a proposal to insert the word reagent for in vitro use. And here I think again we would accept that, because a reagent becomes part of the medical device in many cases. It's a reagent is usually a chemical substance that is part of the device. Then under A, there is intended by the manufacturer to be used alone or in combination for humans or animals, for one or more of the specified medical purposes of, and then there's a whole list here. And so the insertion was for one or more of the specified medical purposes, which we think would be a reasonable insertion to provide greater clarity around what the intention are of each of the bullet points beyond that. Then moving to the next one, which is the in vitro diagnostics, which is also section one of the definition. There was a proposal, in addition to the first part, which was in the Act, which is IVD is a medical device and means a medical device whether used alone or in combination, intended by the manufacturer for the in vitro examination of specimens derived from human body solely or principally to provide information for diagnostic monitoring of compatibility purposes. So that was the first part. The second part is that an IVD medical device includes reagents, calibrators, control materials, specimen receptacle, software, and related instruments or apparatus or other articles, and are used, for example, for the following test purposes: diagnosis, age diagnosis, screening, monitoring, predisposition, prognosis, prediction, determination of physiological status. And we think that this insertion certainly provides more clarity around the in vitro diagnostics that are being proposed. And so we see greater clarity to that definition, and so we would accept this definition as well. Then moving to the next area, which is 2A, relating to the objective of the authority. Under the objective of the authority, the objectives of the authority are to provide for the monitoring, evaluation, regulation, investigation, inspection, registration, and control of medicines. And here there's an insertion of scheduled substances, because certainly the authority would also have to monitor scheduled substances as well, in addition to medicines which should be finished dosage forms, clinical trials and medical devices, and then the insertion of IVD,
and related matters in public interest, which include regulatory oversight of food, substance, and cosmetics, and so the insertion there of scheduled substances, IVD, and which include regulatory oversight of food, substance, cosmetics, is an addition which we would agree with because it provides greater clarity on the objectives of the authority. That was our intention as well. Then moving to 2B, which is functions of the authority, here under 2B bullet D, states ensure that evidence of existing and new adverse events, interactions, information about, and now the proposal was for the insertion of post-marketing surveillance and vigilance being monitored, analyzed, and acted on. We would agree with that because we have the term pharmacovigilance, and pharmacovigilance would refer largely to pharmacological agents and not necessarily to other devices. And so given that our oversight is much broader than just medicines and stuff, the post-marketing surveillance and vigilance is a reasonable instruction, so we would accept that. Then under proposed change to register, under section 13, there's the clause that states that the chief executive officer shall keep separate registers for medicines, and then was include scheduled substances, medical devices, and IVDs in which he or she shall record. We agree with the deletion of the term scheduled substances because scheduled substances we don't keep registered for simply because they're not actually items that are sold, but are items which find their way into a pharmaceutical dosage form, so whether it's a tablet or an injection or a syrup and the like. And so we would think it reasonable that registered need not be kept for scheduled substances. Then the second bullet around registration of medicines, and then deleted again scheduled substances, medical devices or IVDs by the authority, simply because the scheduled substance is not registered, it's the actual dosage form, it's the final product, which is for sale and usage by a physician. Under the proposed changes to register under section 13, 2, the chief executive officer shall publish on the authority's website the registers referred to in subsection 1 and update those registers every 6 months as the proposal has been deleted and a replacement when registration is obtained, simply because registration may be obtained well before 6 months, and so in order to have an updated register when registration is obtained is a more accurate picture than waiting 6 months in order to find out whether a particular product is registered. So we would accept that discussion as well. But 6 months will be a long time to wait. Then, the proposed change to medical devices under 15A3 currently reads is safe, efficacious, and of good quality. And the proposal was that there's an insertion that states, and in the case of medical devices and IVD, performance as indicated. Simply because the term efficacy is largely linked to medicinal products. In the case of IVDs and devices, one talks simply about the term performance because they are devices that are used, and so the term performance would be a more reasonable expression of our intention there. So we would accept that. Then under section 18A, there is the insertion of the clause under 18A1, no person shall supply any medicine, comma, scheduled substance, medical device or IVD, according to a bonus, rebate, or any other incentive. So the insertion there is of a medicine and scheduled substance. And the 18A2 around the bonusing, clause 1 states that notwithstanding subsection 1, the minister may prescribe acceptable and prohibited acts in relation to subsection 1, and the insertion of in consultation with the pricing committee, because that's consistent with the way the section is written, that the minister makes these regulations in consultation with the pricing committee as contained in section 22G. around proposed changes to licensing, which is section 22C. There's under 22C1A, it states the Director General may, on application in the prescribed manner and on payment of prescribed fee, issue to a medical practitioner, dentist, practitioner, and share the inclusion of the veterinarians, in addition to the nurse and other persons registered under the Health Professions Act of 1974, a license to compound the prescribed medicines on the prescribed condition. The proposal here is to introduce veterinarian as well, simply because veterinarians are also responsible for the compounding and dispensing of medicines like medical practitioners and others, and so it would be reasonable that they should also be licensed in the same manner in order to ensure the safe and effective use of medicines in the environment in which they practice. Then the proposed changes to 22CB, where it reads that the authority may, on application in the prescribed manner and on payment of the prescribed fee, issue to a medical device or IVD establishment, manufacturer, wholesaler, or distributor of the Scheduled 1 and higher medicine or scheduled substance, medical device or IVD licensed to a manufacturer, to manufacture, import, or export such a wholesaler or distributor as the case may be, such medicine, scheduled substance, medical device or IVD upon such conditions as to the application of such acceptable quality assurance principles and good manufacturing and distribution practices as the authority may determine. Here we accept the insertion of Schedule 1 and higher simply because there are a number of outlets that supply Schedule 0 medicines, your typical wholesalers like the cash and carry, etc. And so in order to not create a regulatory burden for them, the intention is really for scheduled medicines and here for the application relates to scheduled medicines and above, not Schedule 0 items, which are items that the consumers are able to easily access through the cash and carry outlet. Then the final one relates to proposed changes to the pricing exemption. Under 36.2, it is not withstanding subsection 1. The exclusion of any medicine or scheduled substance from the operation of section 18A as well as 22G, because 18A as well as 22G are linked to pricing, shall be on the recommendation of the pricing committee and in the insertion to the minister, because the committee doesn't make the decision. The minister does, but the committee makes the recommendation. So to provide greater clarity, that is to the minister. In the insertion that's added there, which is clear. Okay, those are all the comments that we were able to summarize. There were a number of comments relating to aspects that would go into regulation. And so we've noted those, and when regulations are published, the party concerned will have an opportunity again to engage with the regulation and discuss their proposals.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I have just two questions. Two are fairly substantive and one very minor one. Maybe just to begin with a minor one. In subsection, in section A, you speak about the need to include electronic media. So to the public mind, that is, I would imagine, the internet. But what about radio and television? Maybe fit very neatly with that definition. Maybe there's a way of broadening it out to say, appearing in any form of mass media or something which includes the following. I don't know, just to think around that, because there will always be another type of media perhaps, and more open definition. The second bit goes to, and it's to A, objective the authority. And perhaps this is a discussion that needs to be held at a slightly later stage when you deliberate about. But just to flag it now, because we need the department's input also. So what you're saying is you're regulating not just medicines, IVs, medical devices, but also foodstuff and cosmetics that don't necessarily contain a scheduled substance. So that's like every basically it's like manipulating wheat bix or gold, it's everything, isn't it? And so the question is, you know, one of the challenges we've had here is that we have the huge backlog just with registration of medicine. So if you're going to move now to foodstuffs and cosmetics that don't even contain scheduled substances, there is a Food and Drug Administration, but this is medicines and related substances. And so it's just maybe at a very fundamental level, is this the way to go? Would that not require different pieces of legislation altogether? And then finally, with regard to the pricing commission, I mean, you know, my understanding again is that the main thrust of the bill is for, you know, safety, efficacy, quality, and performance in the case of IVDs. Now we're speaking about sort of economic and financial regulation. Again, my question is it most appropriately placed in this type of role? Because we actually give them quite a lot of power then to these agencies to make decisions that can impact on market regulation. And is that where we want to take that particular type of clause in terms of this bill? Should there not, again, be another piece of legislation, a whole different debate around that? Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I depart from a statement that there is no neutrality in vocabulary. The words that you choose, the words that you use define your perspective, define your vision, define the class interest you represent in advance, define the scope within which you want to facilitate change. Now the language here is as old as it was then. It's about the centrality and emphasis on medicine and drugs as you know them, Western perspective, doesn't seem to recognize the different paradigm that has been presented and which has been proposed by us to do. But if we can guide us through to look at whether there's a willingness to consider the paradigms which have been proposed and all of that. And lastly, around about 1994-95, there was a policy framework which was proposed then on national drugs. And if you read at the Bill 6 in its current form, and you cast back 1994-95, the AEC perspective on health, especially around national policy or drug policy, you find major departure, major, no recognition whatsoever about what was the view then and what is contained today. Perhaps we have to go a little bit back and look at that frame and say, what is the context and what was the perspective then? Is that still relevant taking the process of this bill forward? Thank you.
No, thanks. Well, first one will be a general question, and then the second one will be specific on the first. The general one is that the amendment was done in 2008. And since then, it was not operationalized. What could be the reason, and what assurance that now when we pass this one, it will be operationalized? Why was it 2008? What was about the next one for it to be put into operation? And what is it that is now different
that will make the tsunami, once it is passed, to be operationalized? That's a general question. And then coming to the bill, one of the objectives in terms of the background, if you read the case, is to replace the word product. But I've seen when you go to the, because what you did was, in 2008, you replaced medicine with products. You are now going back. But I've seen that some of the word products that are appearing in the 2008 that you have amended in 2008 that are still appearing. Some of them you are not changing. They are still appearing. I just want to get a clarity. Which one is being removed and which one is not being removed? And what is the reason for those that are not simple? Let me just be practical. If you go to section 7, of the 2008, S72 of 2008. Where you have substituted medicine with product, the prohibition on sale is the prohibition on sale of products, medical services, or IVDs. But in this current one, you are not amending that. It is still the product. But you said in the bill you are changing, you are amending everything around products into medicine. But you are not amending that section that deals with the provision on the sale of products. Which means that it will still, after the act, after it has become an act, it will still be provision on sale on products, not on medicine. I'm just putting, there are a large number of them that have When I was making a comparison, I found that you have not touched them. I don't know if it was an omission or they were left because they are not supposed to be substituted as the intention of the bill. So that we get a clarity around that and understand which are those that are substituted and which are those that are not supposed to be substituted. In that regard, if you can just get that clarity, so that as we read the bill and make that comparison with the 2008, we're able to see the synergy around some of the amendments that are proposing and the things that are not supposed to be changed, the things that are supposed to be changed, so that there's the same understanding. But I had a difficulty when I was making that comparison, when I was doing to do the reading and making comparison. What the 2008 Act says and what you are proposing and somewhere you change, somewhere you are not changing, I got confused in the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I just want the assurance from the department that if SAHPRA does in the capacity to regulate, nursing, food stuff, for the nurse production, looking at the FTC surface, everything, do they really have the capacity to do that? There was an assurance that they will actually be able to do this huge number of responsibilities.
Thanks, Chair. So I think in terms of the bill, Member Masalela and my Dr. Volnick and James have covered me. But I'm just thinking that the amendments that Member Masalela have raised now in terms of the bill I'm not sure if we are going to do justice, if we are going to deal with this bill in pieces, after all the things that he mentioned now. And Chair, with regard to the traditional, what do you call it, traditional medicine. If you remember in the public hearings that we held, there were issues that needed to be addressed with the traditional healers. I want to check first with the department if they had a meeting or a workshop regarding the bill, because they were there when the presentations were made. And you could see that they don't even understand, you know, my assessment or my assumption is that they don't even understand what the bill entails. And you see, if we are going to deal with the bill and leave out the issues that were raised by them, and, you know, as we fear, that won't do justice to the bill. And I'm sure there is a need for us to consider their concerns, whether traditional medicines must be regulated separate from this Western medicines or what. But, you know, I feel very strong that traditional medicines must not be regulated according to Western medicine, because if you look at all the things that this bill entails, and you look at the practice and traditional medicines of traditional healers and traditional medicines, they don't fit in. So I think the department must deal with traditional issues separately, and also go and look at the acts that you have in terms of traditional issues, and invite all traditional leaders or healers, so that, you know, you can have the right perspective or insight on exactly what is it that they are doing, and how must you regulate our traditional medicines. Because you see, I'm afraid that, you know, at the end of the day, if we do everything Western, you know, I'm very jealous with my culture and our tradition. I don't want to see it vanishing in any form. So I want the department to deal with it separately, so that at the end of the day, you know, they cannot come and be confused by certain people who are opportunistic, you know, who have their own agenda. Our people must be well represented. So if we can just tell us on whether we have met with them, and what other meetings or arrangements do you have with them, and do you consider having a separate way on how are you going to deal with this medicine. They are traditional things. But with regard to the SAPRA, you know, I was sitting trying to digest if really SAPRA is the solution here, or we are just taking shortcuts. I was sitting thinking, you know, looking at the issues that were raised during our submissions, the delays, for approvals, you know, there were many things that they raised, and I'm asking myself if SAPRA is the right solution for us to regulate, or what is it that you need to do. Maybe, you know, you need to take some time and check if this bill really addresses the issues that you think, you know, you want to address. Because, you know, when you look at SAFRA, if you establish SAFRA, that means SAFRA is not going to be effective. Even now. Maybe it's going to take some years. Because when you establish a new office, you know, which is, there needs to be budget, you need to staff it, and you must put this in the place. So, what is going to happen during that time? Because remember, there are other things, applications that you have, that the MCC must deal with. What's going to happen? Because already now, people are complaining everything that they have applied, you are taking some time and all that. You know, there are many things that came to my mind, and I'm not sure if you are going to do justice. But I'm not saying you must not have the bill, but I'm saying, just think about all these things, if it's practical. Thanks, sir.
No, thanks, sir. I think we must brace ourselves for a situation where we are not going to want to rush to conclude whatever deliberations and discussions around this particular deal. And we must not have a situation where we unnecessarily put pressure on ourselves. But I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done given the many issues that were raised by a lot of the stakeholders. And I see to a certain extent that the department has attempted to reflect on some of those that they think there is some agreement, you know, on the issues raised by some of the most representatives, the stakeholders who made a presentation. Because this is what I get, the sense of saying these are the issues that we as a department we think there is no contradiction or no conflict and so on and so forth. These are issues that we can marry and so on and so forth. But there's one area that I thought you would have actually tried to go to town with. The whole issue around the composition of the board. There was quite a number of stakeholders raised the issue around capacity. And I think each one of them wants to be represented into the board. If you had listened, all the stakeholders here wants to be represented in the board because they feel that the current structure of MCCs are not necessarily have the necessary capacity to and really understand some of the challenges and intricacies of some of the issues they are facing. So I thought maybe you would try to explain to us the whole issue around the composition of the board and whether a divergent interest in the field would be accommodated in the board. Thank you very much. But like I said, I think we still have to give ourselves time. We must not rush. And we must be very patient. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the purpose of the deal, this is not a new bill also, or it is some amendment of an existing deal, is to close loopholes that have been found through time. And there is no use of closing the loopholes. If you think food substances create a problem, they are pathogenic, or they lead to diseases, if they are left unregulated, then we should regulate that. Shouldn't apologize and say, what will the wholesalers think about us? Because here, the idea of having a bill is to try to close the loopholes and save the lives of the people or maintain the health of the people. In fact, I think the bill doesn't go far enough. It should really not apologize. We shouldn't be apologetic about the life of our people. So whoever, whatever we discuss, but the bill will be there. And if we realize that maybe we are closing their shops, so be. So let them close. If, what's the point if all the customers are dead and then we left the shops open? My take on this thing is that if we feel it must be done, it must be done, then we will bargain about amending what was correctly done. We say, well, maybe, what you call it, opportunity cost. But I think the opportunity cost should be biased on the side of the patient, not on the side of the wholesaler. And of course, all deals really are not efficacious. You can't use old deals and say, well, since the time of old Kruger, they did working. Otherwise, there is no need for us to amend or actually promulgate new deals whatsoever and make them into law. Because as people develop, conditions changes and relations changes, and that should be regulated by law. And old laws, okay, fine, they are good, they are there, they form a basis on upon which we can build, but not go back to them and say, well, they've been working for us for a long time. So let's not be apologetic. Let's do it, make a mess of it, amend it until we get it right. Thank you.
I want to ask a proposal. I saw one of my motion in the okay.
Yeah, I forgot one thing, sir. Just a clarity. When I was perusing, I found some inconsistencies. There are instances where when you are substituting, then the word that you are substituting, you put it into bracket. But the instance is where you just substitute without putting anything. Just that the name disappear and then you've got a new word. Without the older one being reflected into the new one. I can give you an example. If you take the amendment of section 14, which is section 7, it says if an application, which means you are including N, but in the original bill it was no. And you have just put N, there's no, unless you go to the old bill, with what was there in that if between if and an application. You realize no, between if and an application, if you go to the old bill, there was no. But that no is not been put into practice. It's just finished. But in other instances, where you are removing, where you are substituting, you put the word that has been there into a bracket, then you put a new one, you underline it. So for me, that has been, there's some inconsistency in that regard. I don't know whether it was an omission or that's how it should be done. I got confused in the process as well. If you can just clarify that as well. Thanks.
All right.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Sorry,
we have been joined by another member. Can you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Chair. Let me apologize for my late
arrival.
My name is
Matuan Dimashab, a
member of this committee.
Alright.
Thank you, Honourable Members, for the comments. I'm going to start by explaining concepts that will be effective to the discussion. But also to mention that I've also brought some technical documents for the researchers, particularly with regard to the regulation of traditional medicine, the regulation of conventional medicine, and explain to members that you actually have those documents that you produce in the department. It's the National Reference Center for Traditional African Traditional Medicine. And I emphasize African Traditional Medicine because there is a perspective to traditional medicine. You do not call them traditional if they are not indigenous. And I want to put a reference here, and I'll come back to the specific comments. This is a guideline on minimum requirements for the registration of herbal medicine. In a specific reference for Eastern Mediterranean region. This is a WHO publication. And here I'm premising this because these are some of the guidelines that we produced for individual countries but also for regions of the World Health Organization and for individual countries. Now, when this document was produced on traditional medicine specifically, it recognized that there are specific elements that need to be addressed with regard to traditional medicine. And when I say African traditional medicine, I'm talking medicinal plants. I'm not talking about products that have been formulated into different dosage forms. And different dosage forms are anything from a liquid in a bottle, a tablet, a capsule, a suppository, and an injectable. Immediately they are formulated in that manner, honorable members, they must be regulated. Anything that is available in dosage form must be regulated. And I'm doing that distinction specifically because we clarify this in this specific publication. And in that clarity, we explain that some of the products, the active pharmaceutical ingredients, which is the basis on which a pharmacological action in the body is the basis of the action. Some of them are derived from medicinal plants. Salicylic acid, which is aspirin, is actually derived from a plant. Artemisinin, which is used for the treatment of malaria, is actually derived from artemisinin, a plant, and there are different species. And the original plant was actually the very first artemisinin plant, which was the basis of the manufacturing of the malaria medicine, which is the mainstay of therapy today, was in China. Honorable members, Tamiflu is used for H1N1 bed flu. It is derived from a plant, star anise. Star anise is actually a derivative of most of the spices that we use. What is derived from star anise is actually shikimic acid, and shikimic acid is actually a starting material of most pharmaceutical products. Now what is regulated is all these chemicals that get into our bodies. Products are synthetically derived, meaning they are made in a laboratory. They are biologically and biotechnologically derived, meaning we ferment microorganisms to make those products. Or they are derived from plants. For those that are derived from plants, people can boil a plant and just drink the concoctions that come out of the plants that have been boiled. I'm doing those scenarios so that for honorable members must understand what is it that we are trying to regulate and why do we do so. For the synthetically derived products, these are made in labs and in manufacturing plants. And there are certain standards that they must comply with. The first one is that they must meet standards of safety, efficacy, and quality. Safety is derived by first establishing whether when those plants get into our body, whether they'll kill us or whether they cure us. And in determining that, we start by doing preclinical studies which are done in animals. If they kill animals, it means you can't even charge them in human beings. You do preclinical studies, you
they can't kill animals, you then try them in human beings. Even in human beings, before you try them in human beings, they are ill, you start first with healthy human subjects. And when they can work, you can then decide which type of formulation. Should this be a tablet? Should it be a suppository? Should it be a liquid? Should it be a solution? Should it be an injection? And do further studies. Phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, those are different in concept. This is the data that must be generated. And after all of that has been done, you then also have to satisfy yourself that where these products are made, they need standards of good quality, of quality. Now the standards of quality are determined in two ways, honorable members. The first one is that the plant must meet good hygienic measures, meaning it must not be a barrage somewhere, it must be a pharmaceutical plant which meets standards, which has competent people who are trained, machines that work, there's no contamination, it meets quality. The second thing is about the capabilities, whether in that plant do they have the capability to make that specific formulation. A pharmaceutical plant cannot be about the fact that they make tablets, but they say they have abilities about making injections. So you regulate that as well. So those are aspects of quality. So I'm giving that background here so that you understand that the essence of medicine regulation and the manner in which the definition of medicine is right is about this active substance. That is synthetically, and I'll repeat, synthetically made in a plant. Now when it's made, it's mixed with all sorts of things. And in that process, you need to satisfy yourself that tests that are conducted meet certain standards that are globally determined. So there are certain pharmacopoeia references that are applied that must be complied with. Now, all those are things that are regulated. So the distinction here is that when it comes to plants, a plant is not made in a laboratory. A plant is not made in a manufacturing plant. It's a herbal product. It's probably from a garden. It's probably a tea that you drink. So with respect to it, consistent with what honorable members will say, you need to have a particular framework within which you regulate. You can't have one standard approach towards that. I just wanted to emphasize that upfront to make sure that there is no confusion. The second point that I would like to raise is that South Africa has had the Medicines Act since the thalidomide disaster. But prior to thalidomide, there were other disasters that happened. In the early 1800s, in the U.S., children died from sulfonylamide, which killed a few people in the U.S., and they came up with a piece of legislation to regulate quality. The advent of thalidomide in Germany, because it was produced in Germany, was what led to the new law, including in South Africa in 1965 for the Medicines Act. So the Medicines Act is old, it's a 1965 Act that has been amended over and over again. But what has happened over the years here is that through the Medicines Act there's always been a definition of medical device. And that all there was definitions. But no regulation mechanism or so, meaning medical devices in this country have never been regulated at all. It has been free for all. Anybody who wants to sell a medical device comes and sells. And medical device can be anything from a spatula to a crush, but also to a pacemaker. So all those have not been regulated. So the question is, you cannot have a definition and that's it, but you don't have a regulation mechanism. So that's what needed to be fixed. The second chair is that with the attempted amendments over the number of years, the amendments have not created a regulatory authority. And I'll emphasize that as a regulatory authority. I know that people know that there's the National Control Council, But I'd like to explain what this charter is. Medicines Control Council is members who are appointed by the minister, who meet from time to time. But to actually regulatory agent, engine, is officials of the department. Those are people who are there employed full time. So you've got a council that makes decisions, but that does not have a structure of its own. That's the first thing. The second is the council has committees and experts. All of them, I think invariably I can go to every single institution in this country, every single university. We have experts just have an NCC. Now, all of those experts, they teach at university, they conduct research. The work of NCC, they do it when they spot their time. Now you can't take such an important regulatory body and put it in the hands of people who also have other commitments and they do it part-time. It cannot be. It cannot be. The staff of the Department of Health only provide administrative support to the experts who are part-time. Now you can't regulate like that. The FDA in the U.S. has 10,000 full-time staff who regulate products in the U.S. I can take you one by one. I've done a regulatory assessment across the country. I can give you a report of different regulatory agencies that were set in Africa, in Asia, even in Europe. And we've done comparative analysis. I can tell you the number of regulators in each country, including Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has full-time staff that regulate. They're not part-time here, part-time there, doing admin here. This is the regulatory structure in South Africa. It's probably one of the most inappropriate. It's one of the most inappropriate. Those backlogs that have been said will continue. Because you have admin staff, I mean the pharmacists that you employ, they don't make decisions. They can't evaluate. They wait for a report of an expert sitting in a university if he has free time. And when he sends that report, it's just one aspect of the report, maybe about safety. It doesn't say much about efficacy. Another report must come from yet another expert from another university about efficacy. And another report on quality. In addition, you must still have inspectors that go and inspect plans to say yes, relative to that particular product, that company has a facility and they can produce that product for which they have applied for registration. Now, you have to fix that. That is one aspect about the authority. You have to fix that. And for those unregulated products, you have to take a decision that you continue with products that work or that do not work. I want to just paint the scenario. You might be aware, Chair, that a couple of years ago, maybe two or so, we had headlines that the HIV test kits had not been pre-qualified. You know why? Pre-qualified by WHO, yes. Precisely because South Africa does not regulate them. So it means you rely on other regulatory authorities, or you rely on WHO, or you rely on other bodies, because you do not have a regulatory system in this country to regulate the most important products. Zimbabwe across the border regulates condoms. In South Africa, the condoms that you see in the private sector are unregulated because you don't regulate devices. The condoms that you buy in the public sector, because you have the South African Bureau of Standards, at least you send them there to say, do they meet the standards, but it's not a regulatory system. You just want them to give you assurance that they've been tested. But that's giving you the truth that you need a proper regulatory system to regulate all products. So the other one, in response to the issue about products, and I just answered maybe to go to the specific question. So when you look at the amendment in 2008, I think we wanted a simpler way of, maybe a shortcut of calling everything product. But in that definition of product, we added cosmetics and we also added foodstuffs. But in the same law, we had cosmetic definition and foodstuffs. So as you regulate, when you look at, you also have a law that says foodstuffs, cosmetics and disinfectant act. We have a law like that. But that law
It's actually under the control of the Director General. But some of the products are in accumulation. They are tethered, you follow them. But you call that a foodstuff. A foodstuff cannot be in that formulation. So you have to decide whether this is a tablet or a capsule, can you call it a foodstuff? Can you call it a foodstuff? You can't. So some of the comments there were that they are nutraceuticals and they are cosmeceuticals. I said, well, some people can use those definitions, but they confuse the public. We must call them that they are tablets that contain vitamins. And then besides, we still need good manufacturing practice for them. Anybody who formulates, who makes a dosage form, that dosage form must be regulated. Perhaps you can agree. Don't call it a traditional medicine because it is a formulation. If we think that it contains herbal substances, then let's say so. And define what those herbal substances are. So I thought I should give that background before I give my colleagues to respond. Under.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll go through each of the questions as I've noted them. I think the issue around mass media, I think that's a possibility. I think how we phrase that probably would be an issue to deal with. Around the question about foodstuffs and cosmetics, I think it's important to recognize that foodstuffs are currently, as we speak, regulated. The extent of regulation is not where it should be. So I can reflect, for example, the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture was quite upset when there was the donkey meat and horse meat scandal, right? And so the question to ask was, why are we not regulating it more effectively? And so the intention of this body is to deal with that type of regulation. So currently we have regulation around what foodstuffs labeling should be, etc. But it needs to go beyond that simple labeling, but get into the other issues relating to foodstuffs. I think the comments that many people have made about, you know, you want to regulate foodstuffs, but you've not dealt with medicines yet appropriately, is fair comment, but I think people are reflecting on the current environment that DG just explained. You have an NPC that's part-time, that's coming in and having to deal with these submissions and sort of backlog. And so people in their minds are worried that you're now going to bring foodstuffs and cosmetics, and they are going to hold up medicines. But I think one is to recognize that a pathway for regulation of foodstuffs and cosmetics will certainly be different from medicines because they are completely different commodities which require a different science on how they regulate. So the fear that their product is held up by something else, I think is not really going to happen. On the issue about the pricing stuff, in 22G, which is already implemented, so manufacturers are currently regulated in terms of price. If we don't do this amendment, there is a likelihood that manufacturers may suffer harm in that there may be a product that they have that effectively went up in price for some exceptional reason, and they would not have the opportunity then to make application for that because the SAHPRA would be dealing with efficacy, safety, and quality, and the pricing committee is dealing with prices. So if that amendment's not there, they'll have that adverse effect. Around paradigms, I think the DG has attempted to respond to that. If I could just maybe complement it by saying that if you look at medicinal products, the science is very different. So if you're talking about a plant, if you grow the same plant in different areas, if the plant grows in different soil, it has access to different levels of irrigation, different levels of sunlight, etc. The chemical products that are produced in that plant are so different. So the regulatory perspective that you apply would have to be very different for that. In the case of a drug, we basically have a defined chemical structure and it must meet that chemical structure. If it doesn't meet it, it's out. And so in the case of traditional medicine, the area is not as strict about those kinds of things. It's very different. I think that's important to recognize. Also that there is a committee of traditional medicine, a unit relating to traditional medicine within the department that's trying to deal with how do we regulate traditional medicine, what should be the regulatory approach, etc. And so that committee continues to work, but obviously this is not a science that has developed yet as the science of Western medicine. However, traditional medicine, for example, in the Chinese and the Indian sect have developed pharmacopoeia. So one of the first steps would have to be to develop some sort of pharmacopoeial index by which we can then deal with these kinds of medicines. There's also the practice of traditional medicine, which we also are attempting to establish a council on. On the question about what's different now, I think the most critical thing is that the harm that is currently happening in the environment is largely linked to what the disease is. Over the last 10 years, we've had about a five-fold increase in the application to the Medicine Control Council, with the same resources effectively trying to deal with that. And if you have such a big increase in applications, but your resources to address them are not properly aligned, then you will create a backlog. Now the question is, how do we get out of the backlog? And as the DGO is explaining, the experts are all part-time people. They have their day jobs, so they don't have time to work full-time on these applications. And so the public are then prejudiced because there are new medicines which need to be registered, which can't be registered, simply because there are not enough people to evaluate it. So we have this backlog which go into years. So there's real harm to the public if we fail to act now in trying to actually start regulating them. To give you an example of devices, in addition to what the DG was talking about, I mean, condoms and other things, when we do tenders, for example, of sutures or catheters, and we then have to put it through a test at the SADS, which is not as rigorous as the regulator would do, I mean, more than 50% of the items fail, but they're currently being sold in the open market, right? So you could go into a private institution that's not subject to government tenders and then be accessing these products because there's nobody regulating it. There's a person could sell it. Or if you land yourself in a hospital and you put on heart-lung machine, for example, that machine is not regulated for anybody. That machine switches off or causes harm to you while it's operating. I mean, who's liable? Who checks that? Nobody. So these are some of the areas that are huge regulatory gaps that we have. I think that the issue around the burden and trying to deal with whether this is the solution, I think it's important to recognize that if we don't create a structure that's independent, that is appropriately funded to be able to employ people full time, to be able to respond to the applications, this is probably the biggest harm. On the issue about the composition of the board, the Act provides for each of the skills that are required. And my understanding is that the parties concerned were asking about whether they can be a representative on the board. And so the question is, if you're being regulated, you can't also be participating in the board. And so that would be a huge challenge if somebody wants to also be representing on the board. But what does happen is that those that are being regulated engage with the regulator through fora. So in other words, the regulator speaks to those being regulated about the approach being taken, about the policy. And the individuals or the companies being regulated, they have an opportunity to share with the regulator what would be the hurdles for them to comply with such legislation. I think also the issue, I think my colleague may be able to respond to the issue around where the square brackets and why sometimes the drafters don't put square brackets into the underlying.
Maybe before he adds, I just wanted to mention to the members that in preparation for SAPRA, we have started the process of establishing the Institute of Regulatory Science. The training has started with 25 South Africans. Some of them have masters, others have PhDs. The first training started at the University of Witwatersrand, because in all of these universities, this is where our experts are. And I just want to give members a sense of the expertise in these institutions that has been built over the years, but that unfortunately resides in the institution. Western Cape, for instance, University of Cape Town, has been known globally, not only in South Africa, to have expertise in safety, medical safety. The Pharmacovigilance Center for the Medicines Control Council is actually based in UCT, as well as the information, drug information unit. The second university is University of Western Cape. the monographs that have been developed by WHO have been on the basis of the expertise from UWC. But those are monographs that are used out and such. We have not benefited from using those monographs. And this is for complementary and traditional medicine. So there's actually a wealth of expertise. This is why it resides in the university, that we don't have full-time people doing the work. Equally, check for quality, University of Northwest has actually been the WHO Collaborating Center on Quality. Now, what has happened over the years, WHO has been sending samples for tests for the rest of the continent to be tested at the University of Northwest. The University of Pretoria has been our institution that has been known for veterinary science, all veterinary products. The excess has been coming from the Rhodes University has been largely on bioequivalence and bioavailability studies. I'm just showing you this. This is how we've grown in the excess. Because they are in the universities. We need them full-time, meaning we need to train people to be full-time in the institutions. Our regulatory boards doing the work on full-time basis. The lawyer will explain about product and the practice. Maybe there's some draft in the I don't know, Jeff. I'm sure.
Thanks, Richard. I was going to ask about creating the corpus of this knowledge and the people. Now that the corpus of knowledge is there, and the people are doing it as part time, but they have the expertise, it is not just good enough to say we can bring them together. Like you get national research and say there is a war somewhere. You got the expertise, they fight. They want to survive, they won't fight. So what you need to do is to create your own staff and who will be loyal to the institution, who will do what they are supposed to do without fear or favor, or losing out on their colleagues who say, we thought that you were like this and this and this. So that's very important. I was going to ask it in the beginning that you have to create the staff. You have to recruit people, give them money or scholarship to go to these institutions and learn from those who have the knowledge and whose livelihood is doing that research, to teach them so that when they are there they can actually do more research, because they will be concentrating and help those people in the universities. Now they become the center of expertise and help the universities to bring it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the responses with regards to the food stuff. I'd like to begin there. And I think very valid points were made. But there are other considerations. So, you know, we're talking about a limited amount of resources that will be made available to this body. And yes, there may be different processes and operations involved in assessing these types of products. But, you know, if you have one compensation budget, you're going to take people away from regulating medicine and put them in regulating food stuff. I mean, you're going to have to make a judgment call on a trade. So you actually are from the same pool, and so that has implications. I mean, I think that, you know, if you're talking about regulation of foodstuffs, there's a huge amount of work involved in agricultural products. Agricultural processes, are they safe? Are you using genetically modified products? The distribution chain is a type of food spoil on the way, because that has health impacts. So there's a whole range of elements to ensuring that food is safe. That's massive. I don't think that we're against regulating food. I mean, we are already regulating food. We don't want to expose our people to harmful products themselves, of course not. But how do you actually bring in a piece of legislation that's implementable? And specificity is very important. So you're talking about medicines and related substances, that's one thing. You're talking about food. If you want to include that, then we're probably going to have to either find a piece of legislation from the agricultural side that can articulate, in other words, you have two pieces of legislation that empower a common body and then change the body to, I don't know, SAFPA, South African Food and Health Products Agency, regulatory agency, because it's massive. Or if you include it here, then we're going to have to do some substantive revisions. We have to take into account all of those processes that are involved in ensuring that food is safe. And obviously that will have budgeting implications also for what you're proposing there. So I'm just, and also on top of that, we've had public hearings, but I don't think the food groups have an opportunity to speak to us. So, you know, there's a whole other process involved there. And I'm just concerned. I want to work. We need to make sure these products are safe, but we need to do it in a way that's implementable. And then just finally, just with Honourable Masala's point about the board, I know that you didn't have it in the presentation, but I think this is a relevant point to raise here. You know, we have checks and balances, and it's the minister's executive right to hire and fire. That's the executive's business, not ours. But we need to also hold the executives accountable. And we have an honourable minister who has a strong ethical code. But we may not, I mean, human systems, so maybe a minister in the future may not have a strong ethical code, and may then hire and fire according to other motives. And so a parliamentary check in the appointment and even firing process to say these are the recommendations, and then maybe a committee like this one, there will be a final approval, just allows safety there. The term biodine comes to mind. I don't want to open that door, but I think you understand the point.
Thank you, Chair. First, I must say that I welcome this informative and empowering session that you gave us. It, now I think we understand this very much better. But having said that, there is this, I thought you also go into the African traditional medicine. Just to say that as a department, this is what you are planning to do in terms of regulating them too, or getting them also into the mainstream. Because I think that's what they would like to do. I'm not sure how that's going to happen. Surely it has to be a debate between yourself and them on how do we regulate the medicine and also get them to be a part of being recognized as government. Because you must remember, traditional healers are people that are very respected in our community. They are mostly accessible, ever open, they never close, there's no shortage of staff, they will be seen. Something that we don't have as a Western. But I'm just saying this because I think that's a beautiful thing. I'm saying with respect, because I really respect the way that they respected our community. If a child is diarrhea, the first call, because they are ever open, it's the traditional hygiene. If, you know, HIV, ill people, vomiting, they will, the first to go to the place they will go. Maybe they haven't informed the family. Well, that's some sort of traditional healer. Maybe one of them no more now, with an ambassador teacher today. And somehow we need to bring these people closer. And you as a department find a way of getting them, you know, to also be educated so that whatever they are medicine that they don't really kill as you as one of the generals duties said, that they don't kill our people in the elderly health hospital. Just get them also begin to understand that they are important, but we need to regulate your medicine because they don't, you must make sure that they don't kill our people. Thank you.
Thanks,
Madam Chair. Uh,
Perhaps we'll have to have a presentation, or at least I agree with the proposal by Honorable Musala that we need to have time to consult properly and to get all perspectives from a host of people who take us forward. So we've already had a few consultations as of now. But it would perhaps also be key to hear from the Medicines Control Council what has been the experience of their tenure, to know how long they have been in existence, to get their view and also to get a thorough presentation of challenges that they have gone through and take good lessons from what they have experienced. We also need to understand from their own perspective what has been and what has been their understanding of the autonomy that they have been enjoying. Autonomy in terms of the revenue, the annual allocations given to them to exercise it, to perform their legislative mandate, so that SABRA, when is introduced, is able to learn from the corpus of knowledge, the body of knowledge drawn from the Medicines Control Council. We should also have, I hear that the PG says that this corpus of knowledge is located in universities as well, and it comes on to the work or to contribute on that part-time basis. In addition to universities, we do have entities that are related to the Department of Health. What is the role of these entities? To provide the knowledge, the expertise, the wisdom that they possess, so that the web of SABRA, once is in place, can be enriched, can be enhanced, can be supported going forward with full-time personnel, so that we avoid the mistakes that or challenges which have led to the Medicine Research Council in place under review today. Secondly, if the bill, Bill 6, will not be able to address the objectives as were articulated in 1994-95, to address the health objectives, the economic objectives, as well as the national development objectives, this process will really be a lip service, and it will not take us anywhere. It will really be in a process of, but those objectives ought to be addressed. For instance, as we speak, Madam Chair, our national revenue on health, almost more than 80% of it descends on drugs, and most of these drugs are Western medicine, conventional medicine. And perhaps we need to find a paradigm shift about that, because this beam has enabled us to lower cost on drugs and to ensure that we promote cost-effective and rational use of drugs. If those objectives cannot achieve, there's no point of undergoing this exercise. Lastly, Western or conventional medicine is presented to us as a spider-man by the department. Something that performs magic and wonder. And alternative or traditional medicine is presented to us as a bogeyman. And understand it will be presented and be looked at bogeyman, especially by the senior members of our community, that all what they know that the best medicine is on. And I don't know why should be that the case, because they've been introduced by generations and generations that they themselves are products of. They be produced by. To understand the effectiveness of traditional and alternative medicine, why should it be presented to us now, when we have moved so much up fast, and then they still scare and have doubts about traditional medicine? It should not be presented to us as a bogeyman. Please. Thanks, Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My name is Ayn Sheikh, I'm a member of the Commission on Health. Let me start off by apologizing in light of the fact that tomorrow is the appropriation debate. I had written that initially. Let me start off by saying that any attempt anymore that is going to be in the interest of the people of this country where regulations are going to be implemented must be welcomed. And I can say without any doubt there are very serious challenges, especially let me start off with the issue of water. Now I'll give you one example. I know there used to be an item on the shelf which is called for diabetics. Suddenly I see the word diabetes is now taken away from their nice or low kilojoule. You understand? Now the question is, for how long have people been consuming this item thinking it's fine if you are diabetic, only to find that it's giving harm and damage? Traditional medicine, to be very honest, it does work. It works in a lot of aspects. I know there's a lot of emphasis on traditional leaders, but even in the different groups, traditional medicine has worked. It does work. It works right up to now. Again, if you talk about, go back to diabetes, I know there's something that is being used that lowers your sugar level. But there is also a danger that because it is so widespread and without regulation, sometimes people use certain things that may be of a harmful nature unless it is regulated again. So that is where my challenge is. There's also very serious challenge when it comes to foodstuff on the ground in terms of expired goods. And I don't believe enough is being done. I see it every day. I can take you on the plane now, and I promise you I'll take you right to a spot where it's been sold. In every corner, it takes me all expired goods. And, you know, I sometimes speak up to the health department, but by that time they come there or they don't come there, those items are still being consumed. So the risk of danger is that it must be implemented. I also worry about generic. There are medicines, you know, I know every time you went to the doctor, he gave you Panadol. But today there's 20, 50, different, every month there's something new coming up. Whether those things have got more of a beneficial than a harmful effect, we don't know. So again, having a regulated body that's going to look into these things, look into its composition and make sure that it is in the interest of the people, it's going to do more good than harm, it's really something for me that must be welcome. The other problem that I have is, and I'm finding it a serious trend, but I think I mentioned one part of that before, where medicines are dispensed where pharmacies issue them. And there's no control of it, especially if it's scheduled, and I'll give you one particular example of Domino's. Now, I personally didn't realize the harmful effect of Domino's, that how serious it is until I ended up in Zimbabwe. And then I realized only that even nursing staff or normal clerical staff know how harmful that drug was. But, you know, practitioners are not telling you the harmful effect on the long-term process of a thing like Domino. That is also now for me a serious challenge that not enough is being done to be able to alert the people as to the dangers in the list. And I know one aspect that plays a major role in this is medical aid. But when it's medical aid, people just prescribe whatever it is. They just prescribe it, but don't realize what's going to happen a year or 2 years down the line. So again, for me, I have a serious challenge in terms of that. The other thing is where I'm a little bit concerned, I believe more regulation should come in, is the issue of circumcision and things like that. Maybe we need to address that because I often read with pain of the number of, you know, of our children that are suffering and die as a result of these things. Again, regulation there, it must be welcomed. Any regulation that is going to be put in it to protect our people, it must be welcomed. Let me just go to the other one. Manufacture. And that's why I think it is important in your regulatory body to ensure that when manufacturers supply, is there accountability from these people that they supply, that they are prescribing these things or they're allocating them to people based on scripts? Or willingly, because I can tell you, I'll take you to some of them and just walk in and I'll get you anything you want on the ship. No scripts, absolutely nothing. Again, look at the dangers and the harm to our people. If you talk about agriculture, what they are using,
in terms of spraying the place and whatever he say they give you beautiful vegetables. It's not fresh and beautiful vegetables if you want to, but that's why we have so many diseases and illnesses. It's because of that again. So I want to, in a nutshell, in closing, well, there's a whole lot of things that I can talk about, that any proposal that is going to change in the lives of our people for the better, that is going to put in regulation, which is being abused at every level at this point in time, must be welcomed. So our challenge is, and that is why I think we have this platform to identify those different aspects where you can cover. So from my point of view, I want to say, I think that with these regulations that you're putting in place, it will really help to I think, create a better quality of life for our people. But in conclusion, I want to say, don't forget, there was about 10 million condoms that was manufactured, polyphenols in them. Remember? About 10 million of them were done. Now, again, regulation. Because 10 million puts how many million people at risk. Again, that's what it comes. So thank you very much.
Before,
just
a question. When the traditional Filas Association came, when they came, they were saying, no, we are more than fighting against you. But they did say that they will make some submissions. So I think we can also think into that. In terms of SAPA, I heard you did say that you are going to train some different. Now the question is, how often are you going to train them? Which obviously now is going to put train our officers, we have to ensure that they look onto funding on that. I'm raising that because I don't want you say you are going to change 24, if it is the number, and then after some time you find that you can't continue and you are then having a deadline over the how often are you going to do that. I want to make a proposal. Sorry, my apologies. After Honorable Nava, we'll get ready for tea, then we'll come back and just respond to questions. Sorry, Honorable Nava.
Thanks, I think the first question you have covered, in terms of the traditional healers who were supposed maybe to make a submission or to have maybe a workshop with the department so that they can have a better understanding on the bill itself. So maybe the DG can respond to that one. But also with regards to expired goods, Honorable Iman has covered me. That one is going to food and also medicines. But also there's one part, Chaperson, that maybe we forgot to raise, the disposal of medical substances. You know, what is not regulated? What is regulated is medical devices. I think medical devices is regulated, but it's not. Yeah. I think that part also, if we are making amendments to the bill, that part also I think needs to be covered. Because remember there was one organization that presented something like this, and all of us were shocked with that. The cycling of these things, you know, we're like, I'm unaware. Mm-hmm. And they said, even here in South Africa, and then we're like, You know, we're scared. That's scary. So I think that's another part that needs to be addressed. But, I think members have said it enough with regards to the issue of traditional medicine in terms of the recognition.
And I think a good debate for two, if you have never been in a ward, and left a child, who does, who is smelling a when you ask, how can you get sicker? If you have never left a child, you have never left an adult, you lay them out because of that. I'm not saying Neymar don't raise issues about the tribune announcement, but the emphasis that you're making in terms of conciliation. Can you just come there?
10 minutes.
I'm Thank you, Honorable Members. I just wanted to refer to this Honorable Member. We shared this with the committee. This is our proposal for the development of the South African Institute of Regulatory Science. If you see the background about the extent of the problem, it also describes the capacity constraints of the MCC. It goes to detail about the backlog and the trends. It also goes on to say how we're going to address this problem, and it addresses all aspects, including complementary medicine. So it's been an extensive piece of work where we brought in experts to work with us. As I speak today, Chair, today this meeting coincides with the meeting of the African Traditional Medicine Experts in Africa, where the African region has convened. And one of our experts, Dr. Mabadisa, has attended. And this is where they actually come up with a guideline on how we can register and regulate traditional medicines. I thought perhaps for the first question about the center of expertise, so actually we are creating this center, and we started last 2 weeks ago. We interviewed the project manager and the team that is going to put this together. The 25 people I'm referring to have already undergone training, but we are going to retrain the existing staff and start recruiting, because the 25 are not currently employed by MCC. We recruited them externally. They are completely new, and we are also training them on new approaches based on this benefit and some of the regulatory models and pathways that are evolving internationally. Chair, the second one is about foodstuffs. Let me just say to honourable members, we've got the Foodstuffs Disinfectant and Cosmetics Act. And this is regulated in the department. And we've got 12 staff members who are responsible for this. So it's quite clear that it's these staff members, but the actual enforcement is supposed to happen at local government level. Meaning you must work with local governments for them to enforce. So what we are saying here is that it's not working as well as it should. Some of the examples you're referring to are just but a reality. There was historically some of the approaches that were considered about whether should we have a food agency, you know, under the Department of Agriculture. Even the food agency that regulates the wheat, beets, and Kellogg's, it will still not deal with the formulations, your nutraceuticals or your cosmeceuticals. Those are the ones that we say SAFRA must regulate. A person cannot, or chair, something that probably you are familiar with is the skin lightening agent, for instance. Now, skin lightening creams, they continue to be sold. And those who spend over the years, they damage our people's skins. And you can't say, they're not traditionally anyway, they are just chemicals that are damaging our skin. Period, and they must be regulated. But they are displayed as cosmetics. But we know they contain harmful substances. So, what I was saying here earlier is that for the foodstuffs, it's those agents that are available in formulation form that must be regulated. And we need to clarify that they cannot be food. The tablet, the capsule, it may contain vitamins, but it's a tablet and it must be regulated as such. And I think this is what we have to clarify. The next chair about the board, I just want to explain that the original bill that was passed in 2008 actually did not even have a board. It just had an advisory body and a CEO, meaning the CEO was going to be the end-all and be-all. The CEO would decide, register, deregister, and do whatever. And our view was that power could not reside on an individual. It was a risk that we thought needed to be addressed. So you can move from having a medicines control council, which is a body of experts, 25 of them, and you remove that power to an individual. We thought that was a risk. And if you're replacing MCC, at least you needed to have something. And our understanding is that the CEO is more executive and it can be administrative. It doesn't necessarily mean a chief executive officer necessarily. It can be anybody. For some of the regulatory agencies internationally, they have commissioners who have powers that reside in them, but they still have access that are the basis of decision making. The risk here is with the Act that is in amendment, is that you have the Medicines Act that had FCC, you replace it just with the CEO and some advisory board, but nothing else. And we'll say that it is have some oversight board of some sort, but it must be in a form of the technical board that has access. I think that's the difference with this board that has been proposed. The next one about the African traditional medicine. I just want to outline what is in this reference center for traditional medicine. That what we have here is that firstly, if you look at all the regulatory agencies and the professional bodies in South Africa, whether doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and so on, they have a statutory body that oversees their work, including a complementary method. I just wanted to show you, Chair, that this publication was published when, in 2003, Volume 1, it's called Medicare Index, Your Guide to Complementary Methods. It has any complementary methods that you have. Now, it's an equivalent of MIMS, Chair. You may be familiar with MIMS. Now, this is MIMS, your MIMS for complementary methods. Now, if you look at what is in here, these are products that you get in health shops in the country. Health shops, and some of them you get in pharmacies. But some of them are still unregulated. And this is what we're saying you need to address. But if you look at traditional medicine, because you have all these statutory bodies, for traditional medicine, you needed to have a traditional medicine council. It was established, and as Dr. Pillay will confirm that the council was established last year. We do have members of council now for traditional medicine. Why you needed a council like that is because you don't want anybody else dictating about the practice and about what the scope of practice of traditional healers. And we say they must say what the scope of practice, which must be the basis of regulation. So that's the first part. The second chair, in addition to the practice, is about the product, the regulation of products. I think we need to regulate those two aspects. You regulate the practice and regulate the product. But in regulating the practice, you get the people who know about traditional medicine to be the ones determining what those practices are safe are. In this reference center, we outline the different categories that exist in the country. Because the traditional practice in South Africa is different, and it means different things to different categories of people. The people who just use pure water, and they use it in a traditional sense. The others who use medicinal plants, so but you still have to define it in a manner that is understood by South Africans. And this is what we attempted to do. That's the first thing. The second is that you also have to conduct research and development traditional medicine. We have our institutions that do that. We have CSIR, MRC, and other institutions that have been conducting research. And we can share some of the reports and the work that they've been doing. The third chair is an area that has been a subject of debate both in the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, in WHO, World Health Organization, about intellectual property rights and of indigenous knowledge systems. And we've also documented that here to say what the model for intellectual property rights and protection should be. The next one here is about education and training. There's no practice that cannot have education and training. We need to understand how people are trained and what the guidance and environment is. So, you know, I can't just wake up and tell a traditional leader, use these and so on. I mean, there must be some framework of some sort, but that council should be the one that guides us. The next chair is about phytovigilance. You heard that the Dr. Pillay referred to pharmacovigilance. This is about safety monitoring. We need to know which plants are safe and which ones are not. There's a plant that is commonly available in South Africa.
What is that?
Digitalis. It contains digitalis. When you touch that plant, I think if you see it has white or pink flowers, if you touch it, it contains digitalis. It contains digitalis. Mm. And that's all that I can say. So we have a reference of all plants in South Africa. Those that are used habitually, those that contain substances that might be monitored for safety. But we also have a reference that has been produced, written, translated, used over the years in this country. That was published not so long ago by the University of the Western Cape. Like I said, the monographs were developed in South Africa. These monographs are now used elsewhere for the world. I'm just saying what we don't understand is the wealth of work and knowledge that has come out of South Africa just on traditional and indigenous knowledge systems, including the work the Department of Science and Technology is busy with. The last one here, even though you may be promoting traditional lessons, but you also need to understand the conservation of medicinal plants and species. Just as important. This province, Chair, is rich in flora and fauna. It's rich in flora and fauna, and some of the plants here are the plants that have been well documented in some of the references that I can refer you to. For other questions, Chair, I thought I needed to say that yes, indeed we need to protect the people, and we heard about the regulation on food and foodstuffs. And I'd like to separate food. Like I said, with food, we need the guidance of Parliament that the food agency that was originally planned, I think it should still be established, but it must be under the mandate of the Department of Agriculture. And the Department of Health must specifically look at those substances that are in formulation form. Those that are either tablets, capsules, and so on. But your wheat mix and others, of, you know, your meat, that's agriculture's responsibility. And Department of Trade and Industry, because under the Consumer Protection Act, they regulate labeling of products. And the next one about circumcision, we agree here, we must regulate that area. Chair, about manufacturing, I wanted to raise the issue of manufacturing. All manufacturers must comply with standard of good manufacturing practice. Meaning people must not use a dirty garage to produce medicines that must be consumed by human beings. It must be a standard that applies, you must make sure that industry, anybody who produces a formulation must meet standards of good manufacturing practice. We can't, on one hand, push for goods, trade, and growth. And I just want to cite from this publication, share what we had said at the time, that we will promote in South Africa trade and poverty alleviation. It's actually included here, but it is not at the expense of unsafe products. It can be. So what we had intended is that you invest just like the Indians did, share. The Indian generic industry was through investment by the Indian government. Indian generics are used all over the world because that investment was made. Here we should equally do the same. We invest in the sector, trade and industry must do those investments. Ensure that all these plants meet standards of good manufacturing practice. But we cannot afford not to regulate the manufacturing of formulations. That must happen. The next one is about traditional healers, whether they made a submission. Actually, we have honorable members prepared. There's a workshop that has been planned with the microspeech request for a workshop. I don't know whether the invitations have gone out already, which I've already approved. And part of the reason is that we'd like to go back what we committed to, and some of the principles here still apply, but also because some of the publications that is all jointly developed with the established. Expired goods indeed, Chair, we need to build that capacity. Now, one of the things that we had was that the Treasury must allow this entity to retain the fees and fund the operation. Now, we just tested that model because the National Act has allowed for that. The MCC at the moment generates revenue of about 65 million. Now, all of that goes back to Treasury. We're saying if MCC could retain that, employ more staff, even currently, even without staff, retain, employ more staff and trade, I think that would really, really go a long way to at least start with building that capacity. So for this period, I think they've just given us about 25 million out of the 65. Chair, the UNIDO, it's the United Nations Industrial Organization, they have actually given us money to set up the institute to provide training. And their approach is that this institute should not just be for the training of regulatory people. They want to train industry also, so that they can comply. Their approach is that if you have an industry that complies, they will not just produce for your own country, but also for export purposes. for your product to be used elsewhere in the world. I think that's the principle. So they've done those investments. Thank you.
Alright, thank you very much. Can we then allow the legal part to take us to the education? Educating or training. The agriculture people, I don't know whether they do toxicology and the problem that comes up with food storage and also the chemicals they use in agriculture, because some of the people who import our food substances, they do these things in their countries, but we just sell and buy everything that is in the market, and the people are not trained in toxicology, and so the residues and toxins that are generated, and also people at home, they see bread has got mold, and they don't know whether it's just an ordinary fungi or toxic fungi, like Aspergillus, which is very toxic, highly toxic. But mostly is mold or penicillia that grows on bread, which is stored for a long time. Those things are what the institute can do to help train the people that will be employed on the other side to tackle this problem of poisoning our people because we are ignorant of what they are eating. The world is against GMOs, but South Africa is proud of that, they produce a lot of GMOs, especially in the Northwest. Monsanto and the others are. But then it is for health people or health practitioner to help the people at distance, are dangerous, but not just through holy water type of thing, but making sure that they know what they are talking about. Because when you have your own research people or regulator report, you go about and do research so that they can prove why they say this thing is not desirable. Thank you.
I think that's a lot of the comments.
Can we then get a little second? Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members. The issue that has been raised with regard to the exhaustive sign, yes, it is true that if you are deleting a word or a sentence, it has to be square bracketed. In cases where that has not happened and where there was a word that was omitted, it might have been an oversight. But in terms of drafting file, any word that is being deleted from the statute has to be bolded and bracketed. And that applies to the word product which has been replaced now with medicine. Yes, maybe perhaps there might be other areas where that word still remains as it is. It might also have been an oversight from our side in terms of that. Unless if that word product has been used in a different context than the one that it has been used as a medicine. If it is used in a different context than the medicine, then it will remain as such. But if it has been used in the same context as the medicine, then it will have to be prohibited. And an example that has been made in section 14, where there was a word any or no, yeah, even the word has to be bracketed and the new insertion must be underlined. So that will also have been an oversight from the drafting side. So it is correct that where the word product appears, it has to be in brackets unless the context is different from what is there.
I think
the members have exhausted
all the questions and
the honourable vomit and the questions. Thanks, Madam Chair. This clarity seeker. I don't need to get stuck on the food stuff, but it's a use potential issue. So if I understand it correctly, what you're saying is that nutritional supplements should fall under this act and not necessarily food. Because that obviously necessitates a much easier body. Now, is foodstuff then defined in the front of legislation as being sort of nutritional supplements? Is that the definition? Because if it isn't, then why don't we change foodstuff in this form to nutritional related substances so that it's clarity to avoid pollution.
I just want to check from the lawyer whether at some point you're going to have a situation where you exchange notes with the lady behind the and also the state lawyer, so that towards the end then we have a combined product of your work with regard to some of the issues that have been raised up until to date. That is kind of the issue that I'm there to check here. Thanks.
Alright. Chair, just to say that in the 2008 amendment, there was an insertion of the definition of foodstuffs, which made reference to the Foodstuffs Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act, and also the definition of the cosmetic. What was said during the presentation was that we needed to deal with the nutraceuticals and cosmeceuticals, meaning those that are in formulation. And the understanding is that your food, cosmetics and disinfectant remains where it is, because it has implications for agriculture, particularly the components where you regulate your wheat beasts and your getting of food in general. So initially, we thought, because depending on who you regulate, some companies prefer, when it's when they say no, they're regulated under the FEC Act. This is not a food, it's not a medicine, it's a food. So we want to bring clarity to that, so that they don't call something food that is actually formulation form. Anything in formulation form must be regulated in terms of the medicine side. And then your wheat beef and whatever must in terms of the food, cosmetics, and meaning it must be given to the other people.
So, is there somebody else who wants
to respond? I just wanted to clarify that on the budget, I think, of food, I think our honorable member was asking, well, if there'll be one pot of money, and so will the risk not be that some of the money will move away from the medicine regulated area to food and cosmetics and the like? Just to say that there is a business plan for SAFRA about how it will be operating, and this would be an entity, so it'll come back to this house in order for the budget to be approved, on how much is going to be used in medicine regulation, etc. And general approach has always been that we have a progressive approach towards regulation based on the resources available. So the idea is not to kind of take on too much of a regulatory burden and then create a backlog as a result of that. But this house will be approving the budget for the entity.
Okay,
Mr.
Chair,
I'll
come to that. I do think that there was a mistake I'm sympathized by Honorable Musana on a document. I'm sure in line with the question that she was asking, there is this document that has been produced by Ms. Brooks in terms of it's the working document, medicine related, really. It's the color code is blue and red. That document is for members to go through and look. So we'll still come back and raise some of the issues. I think it's more when the chair is sitting and the hand is up, either the chair is out of order, and can I check that, because I thought your hand was up.
Madam Chair, it is a point of order. The point of order is that I asked the question. I don't think it's been properly. I need more clarity. And so, because we had to get concluded the process and we went to another one, I actually needed an opportunity to get a bit more clarity.
Okay, Chair.
Chair.
Chair. That's not a point of order. He's out of order. No, because asking a question of clarity while you are talking is not a point of order. If you have waited, you finish, then you can ask for clarity question.
All right, Honorable Members, I do think Honorable Bolmes is
if you feel that your question has not been adequately responded to, there's nothing wrong in raising that, but at least allow whoever is on the talking limited to say, so then after that, I'm not happy with this point. Before we need any further, can I allow, can you please clarify the question that he was just referring to?
I apologize, Madam Chair. Thank you for that indulgence. This is absolutely critical. I mean, we have to hover on this point. If I look at foodstuff as defined, it says any substance that's not a drug, ordinarily eaten or drunk. That's everything. And so if you use the term foodstuff in reference to that act, you actually are covering everything. Somebody could argue legally, no, but you're actually covering everything. So I need to emphasize that we need to be very specific. We should use the word nutritional supplement. Foodstuff defined here is actually food, according to the other.
All right. Do you want to? Well, I want to suggest, and I wish members are going to be, because that question is more. I don't know. I'm connected. When we are in deliberation. Because that is where now in deliberation we indicate and highlight areas where we think that no, it must not be B, it must be C. I hope you all remember it comes to that, and I hope the department has taken note of that. So I will cover that. Okay.
I was going to say that if the house the committee allows. I've referred to this twice to say it's actually within the ambit of the committee to adopt the technical rating that is used of nutraceuticals and cosmeceuticals. And that's what I thought I answered that by saying so. To say nutraceuticals and cosmeceuticals, because if you adopt that rating, that would be what then is included in the bill.
All right. We're all comfortable with the process of today. Let me cover the committee, which is this book. Again, I'm saying that this book is waived by Honorable Sun. Or I don't think now. Or the other question that we have not responded to is the disposal of control of the material. Yeah, so that I'm being reminded of what happened. All right, can you respond to that?
Okay, on the issue about disposable of medical products, in the case of medicine, there is currently a regulation of how that must be disposed of. The presentation that was made to the committee related to the recycling of products and how that should happen. And our sense was that recycling of devices, the regulation of how that would happen in regulation, and the Act has sufficient provision for us to deal with that. So I think we must recognize that the technology of some of the processes that have been spoken about will vary from time to time. And so in the next 3 to 5 years, we don't know how that will work. So that's why we prefer to have those details in regulation, so that as things develop, we're able to then catch up with that and see how we relate them.
Yes,
please.
I asked the question whether there is a point where there is cross-referencing of information between the lawyers. Because you see, you made a presentation on this document, and now there is this particular document. You then ask yourself a question, because some of the issues are not reflected here, and they're suddenly reflected here, they're not even suddenly reflected here, being, and so on and so forth. So at some point, we don't want to find ourselves, you know, confused and going back. We're not supposed to be going forward with regard to concluding this process in the future. So I was asking that question in that particular context. You know,
I think we will welcome any documentation that could.
Can I request you to allow you to explain to
the Okay. We will welcome any documentation that will improve on the bill. And that will include the information that the legal officer within Parliament has, and will share all the information also together with the state law advisor. Because ultimately we want a bill that is implementable, a bill that is understandable, and that addresses the concerns that the committee has. So there will be that engagement. But for now, we do not have that document, and it's not that document that we have.
No, thanks. Well, the issue why we're raising this document, one is because we're not sure where it's coming from. That was the issue. We're not sure whether it's coming from the department or somebody speculated to make it, because we didn't know the status. So that's why we're raising it, so that we clarify the chair. What is the status of this document? Where does it come from? So that at least we know whether it's part of the package and what it, and how it's going to assist us. But the issue that is in the document is raises most of the things that I was talking about, where there's a whole range of products that are listed in the main act. It still remain products instead of being changed. And this is what the document is trying to catch. So that's why we're not sure what is the status of this document, who has produced it, where is it coming from. That's why we're raising it. But it was just thrown here in our tables, together with other documents. So we're not sure to whom does it belong. That's the reason why we're asking.
No, thank you, honorable members. Let me approach that. Let me take the blame for not explaining the issue. But it's not a document that we are to discuss today. So I'm sure there's a confusion, and again, apology for that confusion. It's a document that we say, that's why it's written, a working document. But if you just want to say, so you can remember to understand.
Thank you, Chair. There's apologies for the confusion of the document. There's nothing new that the department is told that at the moment that against what the department has already tabled. What we've attempted this document is a starting point in to assist members in reading the legislation and to then understanding the supplement as we go along with what the department proposes, what members then agree to, so we draft on this further. The principal act, as members now has been by Parliament amended by the 2008 amendment, but that is not in operation. Now the 2014 amendment that we currently have in front and will be considering and will be deliberating, that must be raised as amending the principal act already amended by 2008. But if you print out any due to that latest version of the bill in the public circulation, 2008 amendments aren't reflected in there. So this document is merely as a working document, and it tends to put everything together as it should be read contextually wise. I think that's also where some of the confusion comes in, with what in bracket and what not in bracket, depending on which version of the principal act is read, and on maybe in there, or it may be omitted in the 2008 version. So this is really like, I apologize for the confusion. The intention was actually to not confuse and to provide a collaborative version of all the legislation currently to be considered, and I will definitely welcome working in a team on this. It's always better to share information than have a legal a debate about a term or a comma in some of the members. So I would welcome that. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much for the explanation. I think that's what we have. And that will then come to the. And I see that this is that there is some document that she wanted to, so she's been directing us to the secretariat. It's going to be very important in us moving forward, so that we read, I think we were given that document, so that we read them, because you can see that we are really faced with a mammoth task. It's going to be important that we really understand what the onus is going to be upon us. I don't think we want to go through this lengthy process, and again, the bill is not telling. So I think that it then goes to be very important that we do that. Secondly, I want to, as I was speaking to you, you know, so I don't know, I'm speaking about me.
you know, your whatever, pharmacology, whatever you call it. And the actual thing that that is one of the good stories that we have said, that we have got DJs that are able. Give that when you are messing up, you won't say, but what is. But think where we pick up that. In fact, we have got a director general that is able to assist us, that is able to guide us, that is able to take criticism from us and learn what learning is a tool. Yes. It's not that for the repetition. We have also got a strength that we. So for me, this hour that we have gone through, it has made me really to say, well, and I'm saying here without any fear of contradiction, that I'll say it anyway. You know the story in terms of the office and the position that you are. I want to repeat, that doesn't mean when you say that people are messing up, you won't be all over me. But I do think it's giving us a confidence that we are a fortunate team. We've always been a fortunate team in this administration that we've got digit of your colleagues. I have got enough to say all what I'm saying, and I will say it without any fear of condemnation. So, they've got your own thinking and how you respect that for you. Allow us to say the things that you want to say, and any member will speak when on their side. I think we have come to the end of today's discussion. Those documents that you are going to be circulated, and we have those, so that as we are moving forward, members are empowered. I think the packages are on the window. Order, please. We have been having such a fantastic day, so you are tagging us. Our adrenaline levels are a bit high, so tagging us, please. So we have been circulated a pack. Please, honourable members, that pack must not lie in your shelves, because you are going to come here. And now you will be asking questions that are out of order. How will I be tolerant enough to say I know, but no, that's very bad. Thank you very much. Please, the workshop on traditional healer. That whole process, in fact, let me just correct, they are to produce their submission to committee, so that we go, we look into that, and then we will, we hope that it's a process that will manage well. DJ, I see your hand, I think there's something that you...
Let me just differentiate the documents that have been distributed so that there's no confusion. When we were called by the committee for our strategic plan, if you recall, so we had mentioned that we've got a lot of strategic documents for different programs. And we didn't bring all of them because we had to carry a box. We'll bring more as we come along in Parliament. We just brought these few. Among these is the mental health strategy, the NCD, because it's a topical issue at the moment. Chair, on the traditional medicine, what we will do is over and above what the whole legislative program is. I will request our colleagues that are convening today at the regional office in Africa of the World Health Organization to be part of those deliberations. Okay. And perhaps on a lighter note, so that the chair must understand that yes, I am indeed a fish, but had to underscore that I'm a bigger fish chair because I am the member of the executive board of the World Health Organization.
When you leave, you're not going to come back here and say things with censor that you're not so. So you're living at your own risk. And fine. You're living at your own risk. And help for the win. Can we give the. Those that are living here, they close the door. You're not going to. It's just I felt that it's important for members to understand so that when the DG and Honourable Volman know that it's quite a tight process. Honourable members, it's just to inform members that I won't be in next week. I don't know what to talk about. It's just hold on to that. I'm not going to be around next week. I've been appointed to lead the delegation by the office of the speaker, myself, the leader of the majority opposition, and another member in the NCOP. I'll be in front from the 24th to the 5th. Now, I hope you know the vote. You will read that committee back when the change is not said. It's not in the committee. So that person that is then be appointed according to the vote will then chair the meeting on Wednesday this week. So I thought that. It is important that it's just for the night that everything is being done according to them. Please, honourable members, you read those books, you can be important. I think you have seen a technical and complex issue. It really needs our dedication, our commitment, and we just try to manage our emotions, our tempers, but obviously we have different views. There's nothing wrong with that. It's how then we reflect on those different views and I just wanted to make that an honorable
discussion. I think it's going to be very important that maybe we get an indication from members who sit in different committees. Sorry for my fella. Members who sit in different committees about their availability, because I picked up that next week the majority of committees will be doing oversight. And it might be that it's only us who would be
during this process going on. The likelihood is that some of the members who are sitting in other committees would maybe prefer to go to join the oversight and so on and so forth of other committees, then the committee might not necessarily, you know, encourage and so on and so forth, which might be a problem. So I think it's important that we assess that aspect and see where we can come up with plan B if the situation is like that, so that we, next week it's not only few members who are left there, while the rest are part of the oversight committees of our committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, we will request the secretary to make the follow up, but also that he is out of order. But also request members, if possible, to be selected to indicate if you are able to make what it will be Wednesday, which is time for committee. But I agree with you that maybe other members may be in other committees. So we will have a process. But the secretary is here. I'm sure immediately after this meeting, she will then look into that and try and liaise with members and indicate to members in good time, on time, so that we know what is the situation. So, yeah, thank you very much for making the session continue. Can the members of the National Congress, in the committee, honorable members,
I'm sorry. Oh, it is in Canada. Oh, it is in Canada.